To another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Well, it's been that kind of week. It's been such a great week that I just looked at the email I sent to Stan, said we were going to be live from 1 to 3 p.m. today, so I'm hoping that his work in quantum physics allows him to time travel with me, because apparently, I'm a crazy person. Sorry about that. And so let's see, anything good happened this week, Bill, that we need to announce?
No.
That's a hard pass.
Not in my world.
They put the Rocky statue in the museum it was standing outside of now.
Are you kidding?
Finally, yeah, after like 40 years.
What museum?
It's in Philadelphia. I don't know the name of the museum, but it had been out there as a prop for 40 years. They finally put it in the museum.
Well, there you go.
That's the best thing I can think of.
Thanks, Alex. That's an auspicious beginning. We had nothing. Oh, we had nothing. So our guest today is always part of the trio that we interview about the gas issue. The problem is, you know, that infamous character, Silent Sam? Well, we mostly have Silent Stan. And so he doesn't ever say very much. And I'm like, I know he knows all sorts of things. So we arm-twisted him into spending some time with us today so we could learn about the world through Stan's perspective. Because I'm going to do the back half of his bio, because that's the part I don't usually read. It's always a ton of information on everyone. But Stan Ellis began his career in Kern County in the oil industry in 1975 as a mud engineer. First question, I want to know what that is, before forming his first company in 1981. After his company found success, Stan entered the chemical process industry to minimize waste from oil refineries. He has since founded a quantum physics lab, as well as a company that works with the Department of Energy and the Department of Defense to advance cybersecurity in the U.S. Want to know about that? His work in quantum physics, sort of want to know about that in a scary, what does that do sort of way. That includes innovations in quantum communication, quantum networking, and the development of revolutionary medical research and treatment using quantum entanglement. As a member of the Cal State University Bakersfield Engineer Advisory Board, Stan is invested in the education and growth of the next generation. Why, you ask? Because he has a family spanning 5 children, 20 grandchildren, 4 great-grandchildren. So Stan's leaving the future in good hands. He's motivated by a profound sense of duty to future generations, and for that reason, he bit the bullet and agreed to serve in the California Assembly, State Assembly, in the 32nd Assembly District. And I'm sure that's been illuminating for him. But we continually talk about the California issue with fuel. Then the Iran war came. Everybody else's fuel prices kind of went up. And the world is busy blaming that for the California fuel prices. However, we were talking about California fuel prices with you based on Stan and Professor Miche and Mike Ariza last year. So this isn't new. And I'm sure we will talk about that in the latest updates and stuff. But we have not talked to Stan about the, you know, people don't know. You know, there's oil and then there's gas and there's some magic that happens in the middle. And I think the biggest education we've all gotten is watching Land Man, which is probably not good.
No.
It's a little like beef. We all know that meat doesn't come from the store, that there are cows in a field, and then some other stuff happens, and some people know about that middle ground. But the oil business is really a very, it's a very complex and multi-layered process, and it has been absolutely demonized. And I guess that, on a serious note, I'd like to undemonize that today. And I figured you were just the guy to do it.
Well, thank you, Aaron and Bill, for having me on. I did want to tell you that the reason I really don't speak too much is there's a verse in the Bible in Proverbs that says, even an ignorant man can look in trouble if he keeps his mouth shut. And there are so many areas that I don't know anything about. And I try to give respect to my colleagues. You know, Professor Mache, like last week, he is so intelligent and has done such a great job of articulating the data and delivering the data. It's hard to speak when he's speaking because he is so good at what he does. And then the same thing with Mike Ariza. Mike, you know, Mike worked in these process units in the refinery. He has hands-on experience. I'll tell you what, you can't take hands-on experience away from anybody. And that's kind of how I got started in the oil and gas sector.
Yeah, what's a mud engineer? What does that mean?
Well, so when you drill for oil and gas, you have a drill bit, and it has like three nozzles in it, and these sharp cones, and it rotates. And it's hooked to hollow pipes, and you circulate this fluid you pump it down hole while you're drilling, and it carries up the cuttings and it stabilizes the well bore. And it's a whole science. There are many different types of drilling fluids or mud, oil-based, there's water-based, there's polymer-based, there's many, many different types. So depending on the formation that you're drilling through requires different types of drilling fluids. And obviously it's been pretty well defined in the last 50 years, but when I broke out 50 years ago, not every area had been drilled, so sometimes you'd use the wrong drilling fluid. So we formulated those drilling fluids and serviced the oil and gas sector. So that's what a drilling mud engineer was.
Well, that's, you know, things you don't think about in industry. And when you started in this was... I'm kind of assuming oil was demonized for a long time. Was it such a big deal, you know, from the environmental sector that oil is terrible and we have to get rid of it, blah, blah, blah? Was that a narrative at that time?
No, it was not. It was, to quote our president, it was drill, baby, drill. We were dependent on oil and gas. The industry was growing. Absolutely, absolutely not. It's not been demonized until the last 10, 15 years. And then you see these environmental groups that profit off of, they profit off of being negative and raising money and telling everybody that oil and gas is bad. And it's propaganda.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, because I remember one program you listed some of the things that are the offshoot of oil. You know, without oil, we don't have those things.
Yeah, 6,000 items, by the way.
Yeah. Hey, I want to jump in really quick, please. So petroleum-based products like Vaseline, should you be putting those on your skin?
That's random.
There you go. Good comeback. Tell the greenies that. I tell the folks in Sacramento, if you don't like oil and gas, then don't drive your car. Don't drive an electric car, which is 100, you've got to drive it 122,000 miles because it's to become carbon neutral because of all the plastics, the polymers, the copolymers in plastics, the styrene, butyrene in your tires, which is an oil derivative, the rims that were forged by oil and gas. Don't give me that crap.
Yeah.
So this whole green agenda has put us exactly, thanks Bill for that, right exactly where we are today.
That was Alex.
That was Alex. Yeah.
That was Alex.
No, I just heard that
there are three of us in here.
That petroleum-based pharmaceuticals, do they have a negative effect on the human body?
No. These things have been tested for 50 years, and I can tell you, but I can tell you there are derivatives, they call them BTEXs, benzene, toluene, xylene. These solvents are used in heavy industry, and those are carcinogenic, and they've been proven carcinogenic. But there are also derivatives of oil and gas that are not, And they've been formulated such that it helps the, it helps us. It's good for us.
Well, isn't that awkward? So, I know this is, I don't know, maybe we can't quantify this, but who's the big hater in the oil industry? Like, who tipped that over? Was there a front runner at some point?
You know, Mike, you might address that. This Center for Biological Diversity, and I'm telling you, there's 20 of them out there. Every time there's something that comes up in a Natural Resources Committee, there's 20 or 30 of them that add on.
Sure.
They're always the same. And you actually have to wonder, where do they get their money? How are they funded?
Typically lawsuits through the Equal Access for Justice Act. That's been fairly lucrative for them. Because I was thinking about the guy that Patrick Moore, who started Greenpeace, and he bailed on Greenpeace after they did the whale thing because the people at Greenpeace wanted to ban chlorine. And he was like, you can't do that. That's actually an element. And they couldn't figure that out, so he left.
The Sierra Club's another one.
Sierra Club.
Center for Biological Diversity. It goes on and on and on. It's like, and there's like, I don't know, I see 20 or 30 of them. I'm like, where do these people get their money? It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, and people donate to them because they think they're saving the planet. Just out of curiosity, in the legislature, because I'm sure they're after you all the time there, when they come in, what's the, we have to get rid of it because, what's their...
Oh, because it's dirty. So I'll give you an example. I'm on the Natural Resources Committee, and a assembly member wanted to put forth a bill that would invoice and charge all oil and gas companies retroactively for the greenhouse gas
emissions. Oh, boy.
Okay?
Mm.
So they have what's called a subject matter expert that testifies. And this subject matter expert says, we have, oil is dirty, and we have asthma attacks, and we have cancer, and we have all of the things. So, and based on volatile organic compounds, so I get to ask a question. I said, can you tell me if, in your neighborhood, if volatile organic compounds are in the atmosphere, or is your air particulate matter? The answer was, I don't know. But you're telling me, scientifically, that oil is dirty because of this and this and this, but you can't prove it. All I hear out of the greenies are, oh, it's causing asthma, it's causing cancer, it's causing... Show me the data. There's no data. It's all rhetoric. It's all rhetoric, and it's not science-based. It's so frustrating.
And when you were in industry prior, I mean, how long have you been in the assembly? It's been like last year, right? You haven't had to...
Yep.
You got Shanghai doing a balance of term thing?
Pretty much.
I was going to say, how long have you been a hostage of the state legislature, but... So prior to that, in actual business... What was your interaction with, I mean, you had tons of interaction with regulatory, I'm sure.
Yes.
But with the protest crowd, with the, Center for Biological Diversity and the Sierra Club and all that, did they cross your path much?
No, Aaron, because most of my work was, I worked in the service chemical process business for refineries and the oil fields, and I was really kind of removed from that because I was servicing the oil company. I did live through the overregulation, and it's still living through that today in my companies. But I never had much to do with the environmental groups. I never seen any protests. I was always out in the field working.
Yeah, that makes sense. probably a great way to keep your sanity, I would think.
Yeah.
Especially when you work in an industry that provides, you know, the professor has said multiple times that this is the first 8, or maybe it's you, I forget, the first 8% of the economy all starts with oil, and without that, you don't have the other 92%.
Exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so kind of what I wanted to relay to your folks, your listeners today, was the simple fact that, you know, California is its own island. We, just because of Iran, we didn't end up with these high gas prices. How convenient for this administration in California to also, of course they blame Trump for everything anyway,
right.
But how convenient. But what most people don't know, and thanks to your show, by the way, for getting us out there, is that because the greenies and because of CEQA and because of all the regulation and because of CalGEM not issuing permits, our production is down from 600,000 barrels a day to 250. Well, therefore, now we have to import oil. If we'd have kept that production up there where it should have been, we wouldn't have a problem. And we wouldn't have a price spike. And then, because these refiners are paying, having to pay $150 to $200 million a year because of cap and trade, there's no profit. Why should they stay in business? I don't blame them a bit. Shut down. Go ahead and shut down. If you want our green agenda, then shut the refinery down. I don't blame them. Shame on our legislature and shame on our state government for putting us in this position and not having forward thinking. They wanted this green gas agenda, greenhouse gas agenda, and all electric. What a joke. Nobody thought far enough ahead that we didn't even have the electrical infrastructure. And let alone the consumption has not gone down in gas and diesel.
That's always
the consumption doesn't. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, that's always the inconvenient part of it. That the more they lean on people, the more people are like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I want to do that or not. Let's take a really quick break and we'll come back. Stan, I like it when you're on a rant. So,
sorry.
No, I do. I like it. I'm actually not teasing you. I do like it, and I knew there was a rant in there, and I'm excited that we're gonna get that on the list of things that people can listen to. You're listening to We the People Radio, and you can find all this stuff about the oil and gas if you specifically go to gascrisis.org. Otherwise, you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Okay, that was a good lead-in for you, Bill. Bill was having a rant on the commercial break.
Well, you know, you were talking about the war on oil. It doesn't just affect the refineries and the drillers and, you know, the people that are directly involved in the production. How about all the businesses that use those products? They have just about regulated those people out of the state because, for an example, we have a repair shop. We use oil. We change oil. That oil gets put in a storage container to be hauled off when the container's full. And the rule says when it's picked up, they put a pickup date on it. So, and then you have to write a start date on that barrel or tank or whatever, a start date for when you first start adding oil back to that container. Well, I had two containers. I was inspected last week. I had two containers that were about half full. They were emptied and had a pickup date on them of about 2 months ago. But I failed to write the start date on those containers when we started adding oil to them.
Ooh.
Now, obviously, that oil hasn't been in there for more than 2 months. I can keep it for 180 days. He still wrote me a citation because it didn't have a pickup or didn't have a start date on it, even though I could have just wrote a start date on it. Oh, no, it's got oil. It's got oil in the container and there's no start date. That's a citation. Well, you lean on the users of petroleum enough, they're going to leave. And this is, I think, an extension of the war on petroleum products. You have the bureaucracy out there making money off the backs of businesses that don't comply to every little detail of all these rules they've put in place, even though they don't really make any sense. I'm done.
Period.
Period.
I have a story. Many, many, many stories, but I'll leave you with this one. I had two chemical process jobs in the Los Angeles Basin under the South Coast Air Quality Management District. I had two catalytic oxidizers that for vapor recovery of my separation processes. And we had two identical pieces of equipment. But when we got our permit conditions, we didn't catch it. But one piece was to be monitored for manually every 4 hours, and the other one was at 2 hours. My guys didn't catch it. They thought we monitored both at 4 hours. It came out 6 months later and gave us a fine for $825,000.
Oh.
And we weren't even putting out any more emissions.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to fight like the dickens to get that reduced. But that is exactly the Gestapo mentality of CARB, and that's exactly where we're at today.
Oh, sure. Well, in my situation, I had two barrels and out of, I don't know how many I had out there, but two of them didn't have start dates on them. Rather than write me a citation for that, oh, no, there's two barrels, there's two citations. Again, Gestapo. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yep. How much will that cost?
Well, it won't cost anything this time because that makes me a tier two violator. So there's no fine this time. But if they ever come back again and find that I haven't written a start date, then that makes me a tier one violator forever. I can never like be good for 10 years and go back to zero. I'm forever a tier one violator, and a tier one violation will be anywhere from $1,000 to $10,000 per violation.
So bottom line is, if I get pulled over for speeding or some other infraction, I have to confess that I'm sleeping with a tier two violator.
Oh yeah, you could be marked for life.
You should have some buttons made.
I'll give you another really quick story. One of the auto parts,
full disclosure,
big chain auto parts places here in California, that, you know, all your auto parts suppliers sell oil. You know, you walk in, hey, I need a quart of oil for my car. They sell you a quart of oil. You go out in the parking lot, you dump it in your car. Well, hey, there's a dumpster across the way. I throw the empty container in the dumpster. Waste management picks up those dumpsters, and if they find one oil container in that dumpster that they can tip and any oil runs out of it, even a tiny little stream of oil comes out of that, you're in violation. And this particular auto parts store, I won't name them, waste management dumped their dumpster not once, but three different times, and each time, because now all your garbage trucks have cameras in them, so they can see what's being dumped into those trucks from the dumpsters. They saw empty oil containers being dumped. They pulled around the corner, got in their dumpster, pulled those oil containers out, and they streamed oil. They waited until they caught them three different times. Now, this isn't a company putting those in. This is customers walking across the parking lot and dumping it in the dumpster. They caught them three different times, fine, $1 million. And they didn't even know they were in violation.
Because it was the general public who was putting the
It was
container.
The public. So now they've got to go out and put padlocks on their dumpsters so you can't, you know, put anything in a dumpster they don't know about. Again, that should have been a warning, or you know, to just turn around and fine them $1 million. Who do you think's paying for that?
Yeah.
The next time you go in for a spark plug in that place, it's not a dollar and a half; it's $3.50 because they got to make up that $1 million.
Sure, it's Trump's fault though.
Well, I'm sure he was probably one of them putting the oil in there. Yeah.
Let's just not lose sight. Let's not lose sight of that.
Yeah, it's car, yeah. and it's just the ridiculousness of their enforcement and their rules on this stuff. I mean, I don't think we should be gross polluters or anything like that, but I mean, let's have some common sense.
Although you are a tier two violator,
I am a tier two violator.
I'm going to use that all day.
If I had my way, we would all. You know, we all need regulation, right?
Sure.
We all need discipline. We do all want clean air, and we want clean water. If I had my way, because you have new people starting in business all the time, and you have all of these, I don't know, there's, what do we have, 420,000 regulations in the state of California?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, oh, Lord.
Whatever the number is. But these regulators should educate us, not fine us. They should come out. And they should say, here's the law, here's why you should do this. And they should do that several times because, unfortunately, there are some blatant people that don't follow the law. And they're the ones that should be fined, not the good guys. But our whole system is set up. They come out, they see the lid off the gas tank, automatically comes off the line. No, they should say, look, you guys, you need to keep those lids on those gas tanks. And if they come out two or three or four times and you don't, then you should get a fine. But
sure.
They should educate, not fine.
Right. Well, another thing they do, too, is a lot of times they don't go after the small guy, you know, because they're not going to get much money for them. They always go after the big players, the ones that have very large shops, that have a big turnover. Because they can get money out of them, and a lot of times they settle. They'll say, "Hey, I'm gonna fine you $1 million for that violation." Whoa, wait a minute! And they dicker back and forth, and they end up taking, you know, $100,000. Which
I think
if they went to court, they probably wouldn't have to pay that, but it cost them that much to defend themselves, and they know that,
right.
So they pick a high number, and negotiate it down so they can pay their little cronies to run around their cars and basically harass business.
Dig through the dumpster.
That's exactly what they do.
So, Stan, this is all predicated on the fact that oil is a toxic. I mean, we wouldn't have to be this hypervigilant if it wasn't a super scary substance that's incredibly toxic and probably going to kill us all. Right?
Except it came out of the ground.
Yeah, right.
Here's the way I look at this. We in California got the cleanest oil and gas in the world. From the wellhead, we captured the emissions, the volatile organic compounds, and the pipelines the same way, and the refiners the same way. We put out the cleanest oil and gas in the world. There are very, very little pollutants that ever come out of the production and the refining of oil and gas. It's clean. The rub is when you put it in your car and you convert that gasoline to, you know, carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, nitrous oxide. Those things are are really not very healthy for you. And that's the problem. People don't realize it's not oil and gas. It's what's coming out your tailpipe. And we have reduced our emissions enormously through clean burning technology. But also, we have CO2 sequestration. What do you think plants live on? They need CO2. So it's not like there's this full circle. Let's talk about emissions. Let's talk about the high-speed rail. We're spending billions, $120 billion on this high-speed rail. It's the biggest joke I've ever seen in my life. When you could put that into water infrastructure and have that water come into farming, and you'd have all the CO2 sequestration you ever needed for all of our future. But no, they won't think like that. All they want to do is the greenies want to get paid and paid and paid to call everything a pollutant.
Right.
Sorry.
No, you're absolutely right.
That's exactly it, because, you know, I don't know. They used to put, I remember when the shop back in the, well, that company is gone, where I met Bill in the equipment business, back in the 90s, they used to put oil on the ground in the parking lot to keep the dust down. Oops.
Sure.
Everybody did that. I mean, that was what we did.
That was really common.
What do you think asphalt is?
Yeah.
Well, then there's that, right?
Well, you want to hear some hypocrisy?
Okay.
In asphalt, I was trying to take some of the waste out of the refineries and dry it and convert it and put it as an asphalt filler, as a mastic asphalt. And it had polynuclear aromatic hydrocarbons, benzene, phenanthracene, benzopyrene. Anyway, you had these 13 constituents that the EPA considered hazardous. Well, guess what's in asphalt? The same damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
So anyway, I never could get that done, but because of listed regulations. However, when asphalt hardens, nothing leaches through it. It doesn't go into the groundwater. Asphalt's asphalt. Then if you don't want oil and gas, don't drive on a road.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, another thing they do, too, in California, maybe it's not just California, but here, I'm going to say 6 years ago, California came out with a policy that if you sold anything in your store that was deemed to contain carcinogens, you had to put a sign on the wall or
right.
on the shelf or whatever
right.
that said you are selling a product that has been deemed hazardous to your health. Well, we had to stick these signs every 6 feet around our entire showroom because everything you sell is made of from oil.
I think it was Prop 64.
Yeah.
And I only remember that because I tried to buy something from Franklin Covey for my planner, and I couldn't get it shipped to California because it was deemed to be a carcinogen. It was made out of plastic.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything you touch is made.
So we have to take a really quick break. We're going to come right back. There's more ranting going, you know, in the future. I'm not even going to give you the decaf warning. I'm just not. Tom Lehrer wrote a song for us. It'll be the coming back song that I think just pretty much sums it all up from the environmentalist standpoint. And we're going to come back. Our guest is Stan Ellis. And you can find all sorts of stuff about Stan, his extended biography, et cetera, et cetera. And the other 7 interviews we've done with Stan and his partners in crime here about the gas situation at gascrisis.org. Meanwhile, we are at wethepeopleradio.us.
Fallout and St. Peter calls us all out, we'll just drop our agendas and adjourn. We will all go together when we go. Every Hottentot and every Eskimo. When the air becomes Uranus, we will all go simultaneous. Yes, we all will go together when we all go together. Yes, we all will go together when we go.
I'm pretty sure that's what your inspection guy was listening to on his way to your store.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So, Stan, people in the industry, are they just, like, really and truly can't flee the scene fast enough, or?
Well, you know, Mike Ariza, you're on, aren't you?
He's in the cone.
Is Mike Ariza on?
He was. He's in the cone of silence now.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, he, in the drilling industry, for example, this 237 that was passed to help with this Kern County EIR, it helped with some permitting, but the problem is that all of our drilling contractors have left the state and all the trained personnel because everybody's at the damn tax conservancy in California. And Mike Ariza is experiencing the same thing in the refinery. If we try to bring that refinery up tomorrow, we're not inhibited by mechanics. We're inhibited by the people to operate it. And I'm telling you, if they gave us the green light, we could do everything we wanted to do tomorrow to get back to drilling and increase production and get our refineries up to capacity. We don't have the people. It's going to take some time. It's going to take a couple of years.
Well, and you have to convince people to come back to the state because you can't train them if there's no one here to train them. They can't start from scratch. And so, we talk about this all the time, and I think people are kind of coming around to the idea or the knowledge that we are a fuel island in California. So no pipelines coming in. So the idea of shortages, that's not fixed by turn on a spigot elsewhere and pump it to us. That doesn't solve our problem here.
Here's how we fix the problem. So I've been in business for 40 years, and every day you're solving problems. Here's how you fix the oil and gas shortage, the gas and jet fuel and diesel problem in California. You have companies in Texas load up product and bring it to California, regardless if it's a car bomb or reformulated or not. And you get through the crunch and the crisis until you get enough sustainability by drilling and getting refineries back up and producing our own. It's that simple. But what's going to have to happen is the CARB and the governor is going to have to sign an executive order to make that happen. But guess what? We won't have a crisis if he can do that. I'm trying to prevent a crisis. Okay, so you might put a little more sulfur out in the atmosphere, sulfur dioxide. So what? At least you don't have people waiting in gas lines. And what if you can't get an ambulance because it doesn't have fuel if you got a catastrophe somewhere?
Yeah.
We have got to have fuel.
Yep.
So that's my solution.
Yeah. Well, the paper that you guys did back in October about the national security implications, I mean, it's huge. Even simple stuff. I mean, jet fuel, you've obviously got to have for military readiness, but they're seeing spikes in airline tickets because of
today that one of the airlines is jacking their ticket prices 20% to offset the cost of fuel.
They're bound to cut 20,000 flights.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they're cutting flights as well. So, I don't know what the answer is.
So, in your industries, because there are multiple industries, how do you navigate this for the future? Like, how do you plan your business with this stuff hanging over your head?
I think it's really, really tough. I'm telling everybody that I know, told you go to make some closing comments, make sure your pantry's full of groceries, and make sure your car is full of fuel. Don't let it get below a quarter. But I'll tell you, I don't like to cry wolf, but it doesn't hurt anyway to keep your car full of gas.
And of
course. It doesn't hurt the pantry full. What if there's another catastrophic event like an earthquake or something? Who knows what it could be? What if it's another COVID? It does not hurt so it to be prepared. But I want to go back to your comment, Aaron, on our military preparedness. Back when we wrote that paper, what kind of stimulated it, I was headed out to China Lake, and after I talked to Mike Reese, we knew Valero was shutting down. I thought, you know, I'm going out to China Lake, so I'm going to just ask the commander what his fuel situation is. Well, he couldn't tell me because it was classified. But then I said, what if you ran out of fuel and we couldn't make it in California? What would you do? He said, we'd fly it in. And he said, after a while, we'd move all of our support back to the Midwest and we'd operate out of there. He said it cost a lot of money. But he said that right now, that's our solution.
Mm.
Unbelievable.
Wow. And the fact that would even be a consideration is, but I mean, you can't do that with the Pacific Fleet. You know, the Midwest is no longer an option there.
Yeah, they fly in their fuel.
Mm.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. And I think again, we'll come back to you hear my my little frustration. We could prevent all this, but nobody wants to listen.
Yeah. Is there any? Do you have any indication through the legislature, any dawning awareness, any change? I mean, we haven't really pressed you on that for a couple months.
Yeah, we asked. I'm on a problem solvers caucus, and it's it's Democrats and Republicans, and we wrote a letter to the CEC asking them about their preparedness. How much fuel do we have on hand? What are they going to do, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we have yet, that letter went out last week, so we have yet to hear back. But at least we have, I would tell you this, some of my Democratic colleagues see the writing on the wall, and they're really concerned as well. So it's a nonpartisan issue right now.
Well, that's kind of great, because you were kind of, There was just a handful of you that were lone voices. I remember when we first asked you this, probably December, I guess, and you had said that, you know, privately the Democrats would agree that this was a problem, but publicly they wouldn't say anything because it was contrary to what the governor was putting out.
Well, they're now starting to realize, because they're hearing from their constituents, especially on the price. And affordability issues. So now they're really coming to fruition. It's coming to fruition that everything we had been saying and everything that I had been advocating is coming to fruition. Therefore, they went, oh, this is real. We probably should do something. So yes, they are. They're becoming very active.
Nice. So there's a little bit of a turn, and
yeah.
So I mean, I know we can't ever fully know, but let's pretend we got rid of the California Air Resources Board, CARB, that we talk about all the time for people who don't deal with regulation or don't live in California. But if we got rid of the California Air Resources Board, who is the big thumb on the scale for the anti-oil regulation in California, if they disappeared tomorrow, what does that do? How fast do we turn a corner?
Pretty damn fast, with the exception of getting the people back to do the work. But if you got rid of CARB, or at least, look, we don't need to get rid of some air regulations. Some regulations are good. We have to get rid of some elements in CARB, like cap and trade, because there's no economic incentive to stay in business in this state. They just take it all away.
Mm-hmm.
So you get rid of that, you get rid of some of the air regulations that are driving these people out of business. And I'll tell you what, you'll scream. It'll come back, and it will it will be a great economic benefit to the state. And jobs and no fuel shortage and even cleaner.
Well, and from the science perspective, you know, we've done shows for a very long time on the air regulation, and I mean, you'd have to be, even little kids know that the air above their head doesn't stay there forever. You know, it's part of the bigger air picture in the world. So the idea that we're crushing our industry in the state of California for air regulation when we're buying all our fuel from gross polluters overseas and we're ultimately all sharing the same air, how does that even square? You guys ever have those conversations? Are you ever forced to sit through those? Are they like the Brando meetings from Idiocracy?
No, but you're spot on. There's a jet stream that comes in here and pushes all that stuff out. And ultimately, there's a pretty big world out there. And as far as the greenhouse gas agenda, I don't know that it's ever been proven. So to me, as a scientist, I look at this and I see there's nothing wrong with trying to get cleaner burning, more efficient engines. There's
sure.
nothing wrong with that. We all want efficiency. But there is a point where economics play into this and health play into that. And you have to balance that. And to your point, we have a jet stream that comes in here and blows that stuff out of here. Let's just go back to work, folks. Well, you know what we should do, Aaron? Here's what we should do. So I'm a scientist. I've been in science for 40 years. Believe it or not, we will run out of oil and gas someday, right? I don't know, is that 100 years? Is that 150 years? Again, I come back to the high-speed rail. Why are we spending that money on high-speed rail when you could go into fusion and have fusion, nuclear, and hydrogen, all the power and gas in the world that we ever needed? And it's inevitable. Why are we spending money on a high-speed rail? It just drives me nuts. I'm sorry I keep bringing that up.
It's high-cost rail, by the way.
Yeah.
Congressman LaMalfa called it high-cost rail. Like, it never was called high-speed rail because it stopped being high-speed. What, like 5 minutes after they invented it, they realized it couldn't be high-speed? It was just going to be high-cost?
I wish the building would be high-speed. We'd get it behind us.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, yeah, no, we need alternative forms of energy. And I'm a proponent of, like I say, fusion and fission, which is nuclear. And we would eliminate a lot of our oil and gas needs. But we want to spend it on idiotic things like the high-speed rail and some of these social programs that are killing our state.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just it's terrifying and depressing. I did find the Brando clip from Idiocracy. Are you familiar with that, Stan?
No, I'm not.
Oh, that's so great. It's a really dumb movie, and it's from a long time ago, but it was kind of funny years ago. The guy that wrote it, it's kind of like a Dumb and Dumber movie. And the guy that wrote it, he actually posted on Twitter at the time that he didn't make it as a documentary. Like, it was never supposed to be a documentary, but so much of it was coming true. So tell me if this sounds a little bit like the California legislature meetings that you go to surrounding, like, say, regulatory environment for oil and gas.
Time. I'm pretty sure what's killing the crops is this Brando stuff.
But Brando's got what plants crave. It's got electrolytes.
So wait a minute. What you're saying is that you want us to put water on the crops?
Yes.
Water. Like out the toilet?
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be out of the toilet, but yeah, that's the idea.
But Brando's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
Okay, look. The plants aren't growing, so I'm pretty sure that the Brando's not working. Now, I'm no botanist, but I do know that if you put water on plants, they grow.
Well, I've never seen no plants grow out of no toilet.
Hey, that's good. You sure you ain't the smartest guy in the world?
Yeah.
Okay, look, you want to solve this problem, I want to get my pardon, so why don't we just try it, okay? And not worry about what plants crave.
Brando's got what plants crave.
Yeah, it's got electrolytes.
What are electrolytes? Do you even know? It's what
they used to make Brondo.
Yeah, but why did they use them to make Brondo?
Because Brondo's got electrolytes.
That's Matt Judge, the creator of Beavis and Butthead and King of the Hill.
Yeah, Brondo's like a sports drink in the movie. And, yeah.
Professor Mist just texted me, said United Airlines raised the rate 20%.
Oh, isn't that terrific?
Yeah.
Another Brondo meeting success.
Yeah.
I hate to say this, but we have to take a little break for the news so we can ponder the Brondo thing. I will post that on the website in case people haven't seen that before, because it's pretty instructive. We'll be right back with our guest, Stan Ellis. Radio. Today is April 26, 2026. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Bill Cundiff has been on a rant today, just a fair warning to people who might be new to the program.
Well,
Bill is normally, you know...
I love it.
Very measured.
You make me a Class 2 violator, I'm going to get vocal.
That's true, and I confessed I was sleeping with a Class 2 violator. This was a full disclosure show, by the way.
Yeah.
we don't like to keep anything hidden. So... Stan Ellis is our guest today, and some of the things we have not gotten into. Stan, what is a quantum physics lab? Can you break that down for just regular people? What does that do?
I'm glad you asked, because I wanted your listeners to hear a little bit about what's coming.
Nice.
Quantum computers, and there are several types. There's atom-based, there's ion-trapped, there are different functionalities, but they're a billion, think about this for a second, they're a billion times a billion times faster than your classic computer. For example, Harvard Medical University has already written all of the algorithms for protein folding in your DNA, which is cancer. And our classic computer cannot function, it doesn't have the functionality to solve those algorithms. In just another year or two, these quantum computers are coming up to speed fast, and like 10,000 qubits is their functionality, and they're going to be able to solve those algorithms, and they're going to be able to design specific medications for each individual protein folding. That means if you have brain cancer, it's one medicine. If you have lung cancer, it's another medicine. If you have leukemia, it's another medicine. So the functionality of these computers are beyond this world. And then I will tell you, people think AI is pretty wild now. Wait till the quantum computer gets hold of AI. Because, you know, AI is data simulation and accumulation and the simulation, and you wait till the quantum computer gets a hold of it. Anyway, that's what a quantum computer does. What my company did, and if I get a little long winded, let me know.
Oh no, today was your day to do that.
Well, my company took and was the encryption system and tied these computers together. It was the network. So when you see quantum networking. And it also was able to, we built these transceivers, and we took photonics, photons. Photons are light particles. There's a billion of them in your hand. We would split a photon, and we learned to message these photons. So if you split a photon, they become identical twins in nature. And if you touch one, the other one feels the identical same feeling, whether you're a foot apart or 10,000 miles.
Wow.
What?
So, Yeah, so what we would do is we built these transceivers. One transceiver would hold the message from these entangled photons, and the other one would go down a fiber optic line. And if somebody tried to hack us, this one that was right next to us felt the same identical feeling and would shut down the message. So we were 1,000% hack-proof. We were working for the Department of Defense, Department of Energy. We had projects all over the U.S. So in kind of a nutshell, that's what our quantum world was. And then the advance, the advancement is like our satellites are traveling in nanoseconds. Our signal is billionths of a second. We were able to come up with some software that got us to a trillionth of a second. So, I mean, this quantum world, and it's ever advancing. It's unbelievable. And I hope I gave you kind of an overview of what quantum was.
Well, so where would people... Where would this be impacting someone now, or is this all still sort of behind-the-scenes development phase?
Well, the encryption packages are so expensive that only the government can afford them. And it's still, they have a long ways to go before they'll get down to where we can just buy them. But right now it's in the Department of Defense and Department of Energy and the big boys in the government.
Mm-hmm. And does this keep...
But there are several quantum computer companies that are public and doing very well, by the way.
Oh. Yeah. Like yours?
Well, I sold my company right out of a year ago because I had an opportunity, and I like opportunities.
Good for you. Well, smart people should do well because that's always an incentive for other smart people to go do well, and then we don't wind up in idiocracy.
Stan, earlier,
yeah, I fear that more than anything.
Earlier, you had mentioned fusion energy. I was reading an article here a while back about fusion energy and the possibilities that will bring. How far away are we from like commercial fusion? I know they just cracked the code where they were able to produce more energy than it took to create, which was the big nut to crack with fusion. It always took more energy than it produced. How far away are we from seeing fusion as a viable option to what we have now?
I think I don't know, I couldn't answer that accurately, but kind of like what's going on in the quantum world that will enhance fusion, I'd say we're 3 to 10 years away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that...
Before we get something where you put out more energy than you put in.
Right. Yeah, because that... I after reading this article, it just sounded to me like that's the way we need to go. I mean, it's
what I've been promoting.
Yeah.
Well, remember...
I'm an oil and gas guy.
Well, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, when he was alive, he came on with us quite a bit, and we used to talk... obviously, his thing was the grid. And he said, there's no reason we can't have a power plant for each city. I mean, we can stop this... contagion that would take place in, when we black out the world for all of our electric cars.
Well, that's where data centers are going right now. Some of them are actually getting micronuclear to run their data plants because the data plants takes or data centers take so much energy. They're using micronuclear to actually power them, but not in California.
Oh,
of course not.
Of course not, because. Yeah. Yeah, we can't be blinded by science here. We're just blinded. Wow. Well, and so at what point do they have to join the rest of the world? Do you have any, now that you've been on the outside, the inside, and all of that, what do you see?
Well, there was something last week in one of the committees that came through that everybody approved, and it was unanimous by both sides that they take another look at this. Nuclear and I can't remember the bill, but it actually was pro-nuclear. Because I think that everybody's starting to realize they're getting behind, they're getting behind of everyone else.
Yeah, they've walled us off from the future, and at some point we become,
Well, we
can't compete.
We have nuclear powered like aircraft carriers and submarines. And they can basically run forever on the fuel they have on board. Why couldn't we implement programs like that for towns? You know, have a little like a small nuclear reactor.
That's what he's saying, like micro nuclear.
Yeah, micro nuclear. I mean, that if they can do it for a ship, I would imagine they could do it for a small town or a city to have their own source.
You're spot on. Of course they can. It's just a matter of the environmentalists getting out of the way.
Right.
Yeah, just so you know, there's a little bit of waste. Okay. And every depending on how you're using it, every 2 or 3 years. Don't hold me to this one. But you do have a little bit of waste. But if it's stored properly, and I have a feeling with all of the technology that they're going to be able to regenerate that here in the next few years.
Yeah.
So, but again, that's what everybody's holding is, oh my God, we're going to have a little waste. Well, you just powered millions of homes and it cost you nothing, and you're complaining about a couple of barrels of waste. Get a break.
Yeah. And that's why I thought this fusion thing was so fascinating, because it doesn't produce waste. You can turn it on and turn it off with the flip of a switch, and you don't have to have these huge shutdown modes and meltdowns and all this. You could put it in a container size a box and run your whole town on it, and not have any nuclear waste.
That's why I promote fusion. I love fusion. I think it's the future.
Yeah, I think it is too.
Well, when you were, or maybe you still are, minimizing waste from oil refineries, like is in your bio, do you still do that, or was this a?
I sold that to a company that still does that.
What is that? What does that do? I mean, how do you do that? What is that?
Well, so what happened was when oil fields produce oil and they ship it in the pipeline. When you produce oil, it comes up with little bitty solids and water in it, okay, from the formation. That's bad for the refinery. So they're held to a limit of 3% by volume. When it gets to the refinery, they have to knock out the rest of it through what are called desalters, and settles out in tanks. So you have this sludge throughout the refinery. For example, one of the refineries was taking 200,000 barrels a day. At 3%, BS&W, which is basic sediment and water. That's 6,000 barrels every day of water and solids that they have to get rid of.
That's a lot.
So what we did, I had these massive centrifuges that were built on, they were portable units. And a centrifuge, what is it called, a decanter three-phase centrifuge, and you pump this fluid with a little bit of chemical treatment through this centrifuges, it spun and it separated the solids from the oil and the water, and it cleaned up the water, cleaned up the oil so they could rerun the oil back through the refinery, and then it took the solid and we dried them and reslurried them and made them into refinery coke. So we made zero waste out of something that they used to tell to disposal every day.
Wow.
So we actually, I was in every refinery at one time. I worked in every refinery in the state of California. I actually developed that technology. And then, like a dummy, I didn't patent it because I didn't know enough then. But anyway, a company came along and bought me out, and life's good.
Wow.
But so, they still do that.
So just out of curiosity, because I always wonder this whenever I see somebody invented something, I always want to know, what were you doing when you thought of it?
Solving a problem. You should see what I did for COVID. When COVID hit, I kept thinking, there has to be a way to mutate this virus. In other words, keep it from reproducing. And I found out that they were these little LEDs that are 240, 260 nanometer wavelength. So I put them in this apparatus, like in a backpack, put a battery with it, and when you breathe through it, it mutates the DNA and RNA of any virus, not just COVID. So you can grab a little mask that hooks onto this little apparatus. It's in for, actually went into FDA submission this last week. It's taken me this long to get through all of the testing and all the protocols, but I've seen a problem, and guess what? I fixed it. So now, if you walk into a hospital and 500 people are coughing and hacking in the emergency room, you just put this thing on it, you won't get sick. Or if you have a high-risk person or a patient and you're worried about them being around somebody getting sick, then you put this on and you won't get sick.
Yeah, like they have to go in for surgery, but they don't want to bring them into the hospital because there's so many germs and whatnot.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Holy cow, that's pretty fun.
Yeah, good stuff. And then I even made it so if you were sick, you could reverse the flow. And it would irradiate your exhaust so you wouldn't get anybody else sick.
Irradiate your exhaust.
I have 3 patents on that now.
Mm. Well, that's pretty cool. So have they tried to cut you off at the knees with that?
Not yet.
Because I'm like, wow, you know what? We got that vaccine, you know. It's pretty great.
Oh, yeah.
We make a lot of money with that vaccine. This thing's going to blow that all up.
Yeah, my sister-in-law got the vaccine, had a stroke, and because Bristol Myers Squibb, her employer, forced her to get it. So she didn't want to do it, but had to keep her job because my brother was dying of dementia at the time. So, you know, really good stuff all the way around. And she just had a double bypass the other day. She's 58. So, obviously that...
I'm an anti-vaxxer.
Yeah.
I did not believe in it at all.
Well, I stopped getting, like, the flu. I did the flu shot 2 years in a row years ago, and both years I got the flu. I never get the flu, and I was sick both years, never got it since, and I don't get the flu. Hadn't had pneumonia in like 10 years, and I got the pneumonia shot, had pneumonia that year, again, didn't do it again, and for the last 15 years, no pneumonia, right?
Vitamin C, D, and zinc. That's all you need.
There you go. Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Interesting. See, I knew we were all kindred spirits marching down the same trail, along with all the other people out there. That and they're always told that they're wrong and that they're anti-science and all that. So, we're going to stand on your shoulders and live happily ever after. I don't have a song for that, but we will be right back with our guest, Stan Ellis. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Celebrated the imperfections. I got my slide rule from school. You add it up, and it don't add up. And shed some light on it too. And I'm just inches close to the finish. Cross it and bid you adieu. I calculated every combination, every misdirection, every subtle deception. Kickstart my thinking, I was lost in space, staring at a spot on the moon. Negotiating the anticipation of reentering the atmosphere too soon.
Dan, we like it that you're blinding us with science. Actually, I feel like we're all getting an IQ bump today. It's kind of nice. So much just nonsense out there in the world, and I don't know. I'm all nonsensed out, actually. So, what have we not chatted about that we should touch upon?
Well, I think we, between Mike Ariza and my shout out to them guys and Professor Mish, Because I wouldn't be talking to you if it not there's them guys. This oil and gas thing is nonsense. Driven by green agenda. And I wish I knew a way to stop it. And I think the only way we're going to stop it is if we get, I was asked this question the other day, how do we fix it? We're going to have to get some red folks in, and we got to get some Republicans voted in, because the Democrats live by this agenda. It's a greenhouse gas agenda, and that's all they care about. And they're starting to feel a little pressure economically, but it's not enough to say, okay, stop, make the right decision economically for our state. They just won't do it. So until we get Republicans in office and get away from this super minority, the legislature, not much is going to happen. And I'm afraid that when we do have these gas lines, well, they're already blaming everything on Trump.
Yeah.
Okay? So no matter what you do, I hear it on the floor all the time, oh, Trump did this, and Trump's fault we have an affordability crisis, and it's Trump's fault we don't have any gas, and it's Trump's fault because they don't want to accept any responsibility.
If...
Well, you're right. I mean, as long as we have a one-party state, I think we're just going to continue down this same road, and I don't know how bad it's got to get. I just read the other day that California, I think it said it was the top state for people leaving the state.
It has been for a while.
Yeah, for...
I mean, the jokes about the...
various reasons, but so much of it is this green agenda. It's just putting people out of business.
Which leads to affordability.
Right.
It costs to lower emissions. It costs everywhere you turn around. It costs to meet their agenda. And that's why people are leaving. Look at construction materials. Look at, you know, they want to pass bills all the time on construction materials and how they need to be greener and meet certain standards. And to me, wood is wood. What's wrong with wood?
Yeah, right.
But anyway, they want to meet this greenhouse agenda. And it's costing, and look at the cost of homes. Look at the cost of automobiles. Look at the cost of every single thing. I do not know how a person making $100,000 a year can even live today in California.
Not in California. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I've said the same thing for years. That, you know, you take young folks that are just getting into the work market, and... first of all, you've got to have two incomes to even stand a chance, and the cost of housing and food and everything else, you've got to make a tremendous amount of money, or you're never going to own a home. Not in California. It's crazy.
But you know, we always say that you're not going to be able to own a home. But honestly, rent is more than most mortgages these days.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even here. So it used to be you rented until you could save up enough or whatever. But
that's the kicker. You can't save money in California, because you have to come up with huge down payments to buy a house. And then, yeah, maybe you could get into something and have a smaller payment than a rent payment. But the down payments are what the killers are. I mean, you've got to have $40,000-$50,000 to plop down to qualify. And young people don't have that, you know.
Is that ever, as the affordability discussion comes up in the legislature, is that ever part of the calculation?
It's always, every day, it's affordability. Every single day.
Hmm.
But they won't do anything to fix it. They talk about it. They won't do anything to fix it.
Hmm.
You know, $12 billion for Medicare for illegals. I keep them kind of the high-speed rail, billions.
Yeah.
It's just unconscionable to me, the lack of common sense in our legislature. It's just unbelievable. When we could do a few simple things and turn this state around, but nobody will listen.
Yeah, that's the crazy part, is we wouldn't have to do that much, and things would start to turn pretty fast, but they don't want to do it.
It's.
I hope we get a Republican governor.
Yeah. Well, people have the ability to make that happen. I mean, you know, it's funny because we, you know, you hear always, you know, people are like, oh, those people in office, blah, blah, blah. But they're not electing each other or themselves. Like, people are sending them there. It's our fellow yeah. citizens that are causing this problem.
That's right.
And we're going to have to get clear about, yeah, I hear of a lot of people who are going to leave. You're not from California. I'm not from California. Bill is. Bill's from here. We can blame Bill.
Bill.
Yeah. It's Bill.
Yeah, I'm from here. But
Bill's from here.
I don't know for how much longer.
Yeah. But California is fast becoming the place you want to be from, right? People aren't flocking in because they can't make it happen.
Well, that farm in South Dakota is looking better and better every day, you guys.
Honestly, I wouldn't argue with you. A good friend of ours moved to the Black Hills, and they love it there. They've been there, I don't know, 10 years or maybe a little bit more. And life is just simpler. Our former sheriff moved to Idaho. I get, jokes mostly. We've been always on the joke parade. But, you know, we trade information all the time, and it's like, God, it's just so much simpler here. And at some point, we're going to have to get serious. With a Republican governor, what do you see? Like,
I at least see veto power. I see, if he can get rid of some of these get on some executive orders on CARB and cap and trade, and I could see some real difference real fast. But until we get a Republican governor, that's not going to happen. But I'm excited. I think that we have a good chance. We've got two great candidates, and I think that there's an opportunity there.
Yeah, and as far as the executive orders go, they say, well, you know, an executive order is just going to get turned back the minute you get another Democrat. But you know what? I think if we put some executive orders out there and they show a dramatic change in the direction of California, I think they'd have a hard time turning that back. I think they'd have to look at that. Yeah, I think they'd have to keep doing what they're doing to make people stay.
Yeah. Well, and what are you hearing from Nevada? What are we, 88% of the fuel in Nevada? Or something?
Yeah, something like that. And I heard that their governor is getting pretty vocal about what's going on with our situation here. So we'll see what happens. I know he's reached out to the California Energy Commission as well. I don't know if he's had any conversations with our governor, but he's pretty worried.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine. And Arizona, too. Is it specifically Phoenix, or is it all of Arizona?
I don't know that fact. I think that I wish Mitch was on here.
I think they said Phoenix for whatever reason, and so maybe it's just Phoenix.
It's about 40%. About 40% of Arizona supply is from us.
Yeah, and so I would imagine they're kind of sweating bullets too, as we're not solving this problem.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So
yeah, I'm
well, I was going to say, like, on the shortage end of it. When the shortage begins, this will be different than it was like in the 70s. This will be a different type of shortage because there's a different level of production. Is that correct? Or,
you know, shortage is a shortage, and I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. I mean, I would say, you know, it's looking like May, last week of May now, or third and fourth week of May, but I can't be for sure. Again, it's still to resolve that. It's going to take a few ships immediately to be coming in from the Gulf to coast because it's going to take a couple weeks. So the minute we feel it, we could feel some reprieve in 2 to 3 weeks, but they could be rationing, yes. I mean, it could come in a few short weeks.
Yeah, because the ships coming from Asia, or, you know, whether they're Russian ships or Chinese ships or whatever.
That's 6 weeks. Yeah.
That's a long way off.
Yep. So our resolve is to just go right to the Gulf Coast.
Wow. Yeah, not good, and all self-imposed. So if we were still processing oil and refining gas here, the whole Iran crisis would have skipped us entirely.
Entirely. Absolutely, Aaron. 100% entirely. Iran has nothing to do, very little to do with what we have here, except maybe shortage of ships now.
Yeah, not because we're getting so much from overseas, but we didn't have to.
Yep. That's right. Exactly right.
So,
Greenhouse Gas, hey, Sierra Club, and Center for Biodiversity, thank you guys very much.
Yeah. And the benefit of that is really nothing. I think the first show we did with you guys, what did they say? That all of this regulatory thing, we're already like 99% emission, you know, free or whatever, and it's, or 98, and it's like 1% or something. It's some minuscule amount.
It costs X to get clean air, and then it costs 10X to get super clean air. So, folks, you need to get real with your, you know, you talk about affordability, but then you turn around and you put regulation in place that make it not affordable. It's so hypocritical.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But, you know, I'm noticing that a lot of it, and since you're, you know, in the land of inventing and math and science and those things, those things should all be based on fact. I mean,
thank you.
Right? Like, make facts great again.
Thank
right?
you. not conjecture, not what if.
Yeah.
Let's base it on scientific fact. And
yeah.
Guess what? Nobody cares. They all get up there and pander and tell everybody, oh, we've got asthma attacks. Well, guess what? Where do you think asthma has 100 different sources, people? Is it from VOCs, from gas? Get real. You're so right. Now you got me all fired up again.
Pull the cord. Well, because the thing that it reminds me of, we interviewed this guy. He was a scientist out of UCLA. He was a professor. And for the life of me, I can't think of his name. And it was about the climate, you know, hoax and all this stuff. But in the course of that interview, he told us, he goes, well, I was the guy who postulated that secondhand smoke causes cancer. We were like, oh, I mean, okay. He goes, so do you think it causes cancer? We're like, well, yeah. He said, yeah, I proved it doesn't. Did you ever hear that?
Like, yeah, no kidding.
No.
Wow.
Yeah, so apparently it doesn't. He goes, yeah, lung irritation, you know, all sorts of things like that, but it doesn't actually cause cancer, and nobody would produce my results because it flew in the face of their, like, orthodoxy.
Oh, my gosh.
I know, right? Did
you
know that?
There you go. There.
Like, did you know it doesn't cause cancer?
I had no idea.
Yeah. No, we didn't either.
I'm
like,
no idea.
Poor guy. Nobody heard anything about it, and they were in the process. I think they kind of did. I don't know what eventually happened with that. It's been a few years, but they drummed him out because he refused to knuckle under to the climate hoax. He's like, wait, you know, CO2 is good for plants. They were like, oh, heretic, get out. And meanwhile, your whole cigarette smoke thing, you screwed us on that too. Get out twice.
You're nothing but trouble.
You're a problem, you fact guy. Yeah, I cannot, for the life of me, I don't think I'll ever understand that, how science became the stuff of opinion, right? Like, you can't have multiple facts and that it's settled. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the settled part. I'm like, Yeah.
Yeah.
Science was settled. We wouldn't have invented the wheel, right?
Politics supersedes science.
Mm-hmm. We have to take a really swift break. We're going to come back with our guest, Stan Ellison. We're going to rant for probably another, you know, maybe 15 minutes up to the top of the hour, I'm thinking. Oh, I can't do it because I forgot to push send on the music. And that's why Alex was in there having a seizure. He's not having a seizure. He was having a crisis of mind reading. Sorry, Alex.
He'd taken some secondhand smoke.
Yeah, yeah. He was still having fits about secondhand smoke. Oh man, we will. Okay, now we're going to be right back. No one's having a seizure. Secondhand smoke doesn't cause cancer, and more mind-blowing facts will be coming forthcoming. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Compliance. We just need your compliance. You will feel no pain anymore. No more defiance. We just need your compliance. Just give us your compliance. We won't let you feel lost anymore. No more self-reliance. Still you wonder who's cheating who, and who's being true. Who don't even care anymore. It makes you wonder who's doing right. Someone tonight whose car is parked next door.
Yeah, that's the guy that was at Bill's shop. His car's parked next door.
Cheating who?
Yeah, exactly. That is the $64,000 question, right? Who's cheating who? And Mike shot us a text. The pipeline feeds Tucson from El Paso, but Phoenix comes from us. So we were right. Yeah, that's why we keep saying Phoenix. It's not Arizona. It's Phoenix.
Yeah. Yep, sure enough.
And that's funny. He also says, I didn't know that Stan literally invented two of the processes that I used at Valero's coker and crude unit. You guys should talk more.
Yeah, we were talking about that last night. It was pretty funny.
That is pretty funny. He's been in the refinery side, but again, you know, nobody is 100% part of the entire process, right? Everybody's got kind of their lane.
Yeah. Well, they're so sophisticated that you have so many different types of process units, and they all become experts kind of in their own little area, and that's just has the way it has to be.
Sure, and that makes sense. So, what kind of stuff are you working on now?
Well, funny you should ask. I'm still solving problems.
Of course.
You'll get a kick out of this one. Your listeners might. About several years ago, I bought this ranch and I wanted to plant pistachios. And it was loaded with tumbleweeds. So I bunch up my tumbleweeds and I go down to get a burn permit. Aha, airborne. And they say, well, you can't burn right now because the air quality. Okay. So I went home and I got those tumbleweeds and took them to the lab and found out the reason livestock won't eat a tumbleweed is because it's bitter to the taste and upset the stomach. And it was loaded with these four organic acids. And I went, holy cow, this one primary organic acid was oxalic. So I went out and bought a baler and a grinder and a reactor and a filter press, and I made an organic pesticide out of tumbleweed that was killing bee mites. There was a parasite on a honeybee.
Hmm.
So then I went to the FDA to get an organic pesticide, patented, by the way. Went to get an organic pesticide license and said, oh, it's going to be 12 years.
That's what I mean. The bureaucracy. Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah. And then I'll come back to Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, they were trying to pass a bill that got rid of, 23 pesticides that had PFAS in them. Well, it wasn't the PFAS making the pesticides, bioaccumulative. It was the pesticide portion, and it takes, 14 years to get it approved through the EPA. So what are you gonna do, FDA? So what are you gonna do? Get rid of all your pesticides and then not have anything? So, anyway, ludicrous. Just ludicrous.
It is ludicrous, and that's what they did up on the Klamath. I've worked on that for a long time, and up there, they wouldn't, when you spray grasshoppers, you have to spray them before they fly, because once they can fly, then the spray doesn't work, right? So they wouldn't okay the use of the pesticide in time. And so they had 3 years of massive grasshopper infestation. I swear.
Yep.
I mean, I wasn't alive when Moses was a boy, but I got to tell you, I think it looked a lot like that. I was driving around with a guy through his, like, actually, we weren't even in his fields. We were near them. And it looked like the snowstorms where I grew up in Connecticut. It was like a blizzard of yellow. Just I've never seen that many bugs of any kind in my entire life. We drove by this field, and he goes, "Hey, see that field right there?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Yeah, that's my flood-irrigated field." Hello. It looked like the extra parking lot at the fairgrounds. It was just hard dirt.
They ate everything.
They ate everything, all the way down to the nothing. I have pictures of the little airport up there, and they spray all the crops up there on the project, and you should see the front of it, just yellow. I think it would be kind of terrifying, actually, to fly. You've got to hit a bug limit, and then pretty soon there's no air getting in. But yeah, it was terrible. 3 years we fought for them on that. They just ate everything. And you know what's weird? On the grains, instead of eating the grain part, you would think that was what they would eat. They eat the where the stem bends over and the grain is beyond that. They eat the soft bend of the stalk, and so all the grains on the ground. They didn't actually eat the grain, which was, like, I don't know, more painful than losing your crop, was that it was actually right there.
But you can't harvest it.
No.
When it's, yeah.
And it was screwing up the balers and everything, because the stalks like that, you couldn't process them. And it just, I don't know. I learned a lot about grasshoppers. But that was all caused by people. That was all a regulatory, another regulatory boondoggle that walked us into, you know, no crop.
You hear these forever ever chemicals. A lot of these greenies got everybody scared.
Oh yeah.
On PFAS, and they're basically a fluorine carbon bond, and there are literally 15,000 different combinations of these PFASs, right? And guess what's in your Teflon pan? That's made out of PFAS. It's not hazardous. It doesn't affect your health. It's not acid soluble. So, but the environmentalists would like you to believe that all PFASs are bad. So don't fall into that trap, everyone. Just know that there are a few that probably aren't good for you, but for the most part, they're okay.
And so weren't they trying to do something with Teflon pans?
Yeah, they tried to ban them last year, and I got up and spoke and told them they weren't hazardous.
How'd that work out?
It didn't. The Dems all voted for it, and then the governor vetoed it.
Because it was fake.
Yep, nobody listened to me.
Wow. Yeah, you're in a unique and terrifying environment there.
Honestly, you guys, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing. I actually wonder about the functionality of this state at the level of competence. I'll tell you, there are smart people on both sides of the aisle, but the system is completely broken, and it is really, really bad. I'm really worried for this state unless we get some Republicans in there.
Yeah, because at this point, you don't have people making good decisions.
Nope.
No, and there is a point of no return. I truly believe that. I mean, you look at our refineries. I mean, once you close them down, point of no return. And it's the same thing with our state. I think if you lose enough people and enough business and enough technology, it's not coming back. It's never going to be what it was before. And I don't know if we've hit that point yet, but we will if we keep going in the direction we're going.
Yeah, I was talking to a guy the other day, and his friends are, he has longtime friends that are in the movie industry. And they said, yeah, you could, he said, the one guy told him, I was in Italy. I took my whole movie thing for a commercial. Took all my guys to Italy. We stayed at a five-star hotel. We were there for 2 weeks. We filmed this commercial, and it was half as much as it would have been if I filmed it in Burbank.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, how crazy is that? So at some point, we have made a lot of this untenable, and for what? Roads have potholes and stuff costs too much and housing is unaffordable and all that. So what kind of environment are we really focused on?
Yeah, we're headed south, so we better change fast. But you're right, Bill, point of no return. In fact, Mike Ariza said it best in that paper that he wrote. And before we get off here, I just want to commend my two partners, Professor Misch and Mike Ariza, are great advocates and have done an incredible job. And I want to commend you two, Bill and Aaron, for getting this out there and making the public aware of what's really going on.
Well, it's going to take all of us because there is no, you know, we live in an age where there is so much information. I think we've already kind of determined that a lot of it isn't true, so there's that. So we have a lot of that, but there's just so much bombarding people all the time, and a lot of it is bad news, and it becomes one of those things where it's like, oh, can't look at one more bad thing. But you know, this one is kind of going to sweep through your world like a scythe.
Yeah.
The fuel deal, whether it's gas for your car, diesel, propane, butane, it's business, it's groceries on the shelf, it's all of those things. You can't get out of that.
Nope. And I always run into people that know there's a problem, know that they're paying high prices, but they don't understand why. They've got the wrong information. And when they try to tell me what the problem is, they're totally wrong. I was telling a guy about this gas thing the other day, and he started off with, oh, this Iraq thing Iran thing is just killing us at the pump right now. And I said, you know what? That's nothing to do with it. That's nothing to do with it. And I tried to, explain a lot of it to him, and his jaw was just dropping. Where do you get this information? I showed him where to get the information. I said, get educated and tell people it's not the war. It's California. It's more of California's bad politics that's doing this.
But we've done this before, and Alex just shot me a picture about DDT. We had Rachel Carson with Silent Spring, who just completely, got everybody wound around the axle with DDT. And how many people have died of malaria because we banned DDT?
Yeah, exactly.
So it isn't a new phenomenon. The bad part is, if it isn't new, we should stop doing it, right? If it's bad, typically that's the idea. You know, stick your finger in the light socket and something bad happens, you should probably quit doing it. Even little kids figure that out.
We'll just do it a little bit.
Just a little. Like, let's just try it one more time. It'll probably be different this time, right? We weren't allowed to say that in the office, though. Doing things again gets you a different result. I can't even quote it because we were banned from saying it. It was on the banned list thing along with sustainable and tranche and some other stuff.
Yeah, there is a great quote. The devil isn't stupid, but he is insane.
I like that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Stan, we got to hand it to you. Now, you're going to serve until when in the state assembly? How long do we have you hostage?
The end of this year.
Ow.
Then I'm coming back.
Then you're...
got a couple more companies I'm starting in deep science, and I'm excited. I'm excited to get out of there because been an incredible experience, but it's not productive. And I cannot stand being not productive.
I know, that drives me crazy, too, when you're doing things that you know aren't really the best way to do it, but that's just how it's done. You know, it's like
terrible
that just
answer.
Drives me.
Yeah,
crazy.
Always a terrible answer. That's the way we've always done it.
It's the way we've done it.
Boo, we should quit doing that.
Well, that it's just unbelievable the lack of productivity there. And so, like I say, there's some great people. They're just caught in this I don't know, this atmosphere where, well, it's the best job I ever had. So we'll just keep it going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I'm making good money, and you know, I work with great people. But what are you yep. producing, and what are you getting done?
But the really hard part as a yep. legislator is, you know, your staff spends all day telling people, "I don't know." Like, how are we yeah. going to fix it? I don't know. Why are they doing it? I don't know. I mean, you wind up sounding like a teenager.
Part of the problem is that they ought to be. We got 1,800 bills up this year. We should have a minus 1,800 bills.
Yeah. Right.
Every year for the next 10 years, we should be getting rid of bills, and we should go to a part-time legislature and save the state of California hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah,
but they're not going to change it because they love their job.
Yeah, well, everybody thinks it's so yeah. great.
I've always thought it was weird to promote the idea that, oh, I helped create this new law.
Yeah,
so, no.
Yeah.
Terrible
yeah.
idea.
Yeah.
Well, Stan Ellis, you are the smartest man in the world today, and we are happy to know you, and happy that you weren't silent, Stan, today. Very, very informative discussion, and thanks very much
very
for the
good
time.
Discussion.
We look forward to talking
to
you again.
I'm honored, you guys, and I'd like to thank my partners. Appreciate you.
All right.
You can find all the stuff about Stan and the other two guys that are working on this nonstop at gascrisis.org. We'll be back next week at We the People Radio.
.us.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.